Talking Tesla.
I'm not sure if like my foot should be on the brake or the accelerator.
Because they put rings on Elon.
It must be some sort of geometrical algorithm.
Are you ready now?
Oh, I'm sure this is math.
Tom? Robert?
Yeah.
Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
How am I expected to drive a car without autopilot?
So, here's the deal. You know, I'm not a good Parker Tom.
Yeah.
I'll be the first to admit it. Yeah. I just think that this is a car company that is run by super geeks. All the other cars are going to be stupid cars compared to this car. Tesla.
You don't even have
Tesla.
Yep. I remember that. You've got a Model X. Seen the future, and it is light pole charging.
No, I wouldn't call it a screw-up. Do you like your Model X?
God, it's beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's Talking Tesla 84. We're in the new studio, which was open for a week, closed for 2 weeks, open again. And it's lovely in here, don't you think?
Oh, it's so nice in here. And it really sets off Robert's 89th straight show wearing some form of Elon swag on his chest.
It says
no, this one
sexy.
Is actually, this one is actually from a aftermarket
No, I understand
t-shirt.
That, but it's always something.
Yeah, well,
it's never nothing.
It was going to be a SpaceX shirt, but I wore that one to my shift yesterday, and at the end of my shift, it smelled so bad that I thought I would spare both of you in this nice, cozy little studio with no ventilation.
Did it smell of the fluids of others or of the fluids of yourself?
Can we move on?
I don't know how to reply to that. Starting the show and you don't like it?
I've got a big concern.
No.
I've got a huge concern.
Wait, I have a question for Talking Tesla Nation before you get started.
Sure. Fine. Just cut me off. Go.
Do we have any idea whether or not Mel's going to be complaining about something on his Tesla today?
He always complains about something, but I think it's going to be different this week.
You do?
You do?
Based on what?
The pre-show chatter that was going on.
Okay. All right, Mel. What do you got?
Let's have it.
First of all, if we don't get to the point and go quickly, this is an 18-hour show, and we can't do that because we don't have 18 hours.
So many damn interruptions.
And, of course, this morning, it's Monday morning, we're recording. Elon just went on a tweet storm. Here's my TED talk where I talk about saving the entire planet. Here's a landing of a rocket. On and on he goes. So we have a problem. So I'd like you to, gentlemen, to get to the point.
Okay.
All right? Try and be funny, on point, and quick. All right? I don't ask for much, Thomas. I don't.
Has he been listening to this show? All he does is ask for things.
And interrupt.
So, first
and
of all,
talk.
For those of you that went to the climate march, thank you. Hundreds of thousands. I think there was 200,000 people in Washington, D.C. There were other 100 marches across the country. For those of you that got to go, good. I was unwell, so I gave Sierra Club some more money.
You are unwell. You look terrible. You might have some sort of viral storm within you.
I'm still sick.
Yes, you are.
A week later.
You look terrible. Your eyes are bloodshot and your face is flushed. And it's not like Saturday night, which is like a normal state for him on Saturday night.
It's cold. Your body does look fit. You do look fit.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I watched you walking around. You do not look like an old man.
But my head just needs draining.
Not. He does not.
Does not
look like an old man. Okay, good.
Does need
he does snot, though.
So what should we start with so we can get this road on the show, as it were?
Well, let's start with the Boring Company, but it turns out Elon and Ted just released his TED Talk where he goes over everything. So I think we're really going to have to focus on that TED Talk because he basically summarized everything that he has done, is doing, and will do.
But I haven't seen the TED Talk, so maybe we should do that for next week.
No, there's so much to talk about. No, we can't. Here we go. So let's talk about the Boring Company. So who wants to summarize this? Robert does. Did you write all this down or did I?
I wrote a lot of this stuff down. Basically,
so tell us about it.
The Boring Company. That's how Chris Anderson started off the TED Talk. He thanked Elon for being there and asked him, why is he so boring? And Elon just went with that. And they went ahead and showed this concept. I'm sure most of Talking Tesla Nation has seen the video that you can find on theboringcompany.com, which shows a Tesla driving into like this small little parking space, dropping down a shaft, not, you know, uncontrolled dropping. And then it ends up in a track. It's on the sled, and the sled takes it like 124 or 130 miles an hour, and they zip around. You can go from Westwood to LAX in 5 minutes. That was Elon's term. And it looks pretty cool. And, you know, they also had these like glass enclosures that people could walk into that were on sleds that would get people around. It seems like, you know, no other cars were shown either on the road using this. Probably couldn't use this.
In Elon's future, there are no other cars or pods.
It was funny that every car in the video is a Tesla.
Yes.
Above ground, below ground. And so these sleds go at 100, and he says, yeah, well, they'll go about 130 miles an hour. So it's not actually the car driving. It's a car that hops on a sled, and then the sled fires you where you need to go.
Like a Hyperloop kind of situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like, so he went into a lot of detail about on the video with Chris Anderson about it. Well, how's this going to work? And there are a few of the other things that I thought were fascinating is when you watch the video, note that there are multiple levels. See, that's really hard to do lots of levels up in the air, but you can basically do an infinite number of levels below ground.
He said that you could go and dig a tunnel under a house and it'd only be 3 or 4 tunnel diameters down, and you would never know there was a digging machine down there because the earth absorbs vibrations so well. And you won't feel the sleds coursing under your house, that the sleds are electric powered. He didn't talk about how they're charged or how they're fed energy and whether or not they interact with the car or not.
They're being pushed by underground cockroaches, I believe. Giant ones.
Not
very
rats.
Fast.
Not rats.
No.
Willard's not part of this plan.
Probably they'll bore all the way to the Earth's core and they'll use magma to spin turbines to make electricity.
That seems inaccurate as well. I'm not just going to throw that out there. Like, I don't believe they're going to go all the way to the Earth's core. In fact, I don't believe they're going to do any of this at any point.
Well,
ever.
So they've already started. It's I actually talked to Robert Bingham, and he said that the most exciting thing going on right now at SpaceX is the tunnel being drilled across the street.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a picture leaked out by a Tesla employee that showed 3 white circular tube sections. On one of them, it said The Boring Company.
Mm-hmm. That's the big drill.
And evidently, that dude's Instagram page is now down.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And his HR meeting is very, very extensive.
Yeah. It was probably a big slap on the wrist.
And he talked about how much this is going to cost. So, again, watch the video. But he goes, well, as an example, LA made a very extensive underground tunneling system of approximately 2.3 miles.
Huge. So long.
And it cost approximately $2 billion. And so by doing math, it costs right now in LA about $1 billion per mile. And that's really not cost effective. So how are we going to fix that?
Luckily for Elon, he can't even leave his property with his tunnel without getting some more permits. He's basically stuck on the SpaceX campus. He can do whatever he wants.
He can go straight down.
He could drill 30 levels into the magma on his own campus, but beyond that, he's just sort of stopped.
Right, and maybe he's got, you know, permission to dig underneath the whole Hawthorne Airport. I'm wondering if you can work that out. So he's got a mile that he can dig underneath all of that stuff.
So tell us how he's going to drop the price. So he said $1 billion, but he's got this way of reducing it by an order of magnitude.
Yeah, order of magnitude at least. And he gives a number of different reasons, like if you make a tunnel that's for like 2 lanes of traffic and it's really large diameter, it costs a lot. You have to remove a lot of material. Think about the space above the vehicles to make the arc of the tunnel. It's huge. Plus, cars currently, this is sort of an aside, put out a lot of noxious chemicals.
That's
when they
weird.
Burn.
Is that an aside on this show?
Usually it comes out the back passage, not the side, but go on.
Got that. And so if you have electric vehicles down there, you can make a much tighter tunnel. And he talks about shrinking the tunnel diameter in half, which means that you remove 4 times less material. You think pi r squared, you have 4 times less material. That should cost a lot less. Continuous tunneling. So he would use a machine, not only the tunnels, but would put in the reinforcement wall at the same time. So the thing doesn't currently, tunneling machines, they bore, they back up, they put on the outer cover of the tunnel, the reinforcement, and then they go. And this would continue to go straight. That would increase the order of magnitude by 2. Then he says that the tunnel machines don't have enough power to really go fast. He sees increasing that by at least 2x, possibly 5x. And he gave a couple of other examples, but the bottom line is to make tunnels go a lot faster, you can make them a lot less expensive, and you can dig a lot more tunnels. And like Mel was saying, at the end of the video, you see just like 4 tunnels right next to each other. They're veering off in different directions, and then you see them at multiple different levels. So there could be, I don't know, hundreds of tunnels under Los Angeles, which after you make the the underbelly of Los Angeles, like Swiss cheese, I start wondering about that thing they call earthquakes.
Well, I was worried about that as well, and I just read an expert that said what's very interesting is that on the surface, when there is a big earthquake, there's lots of cracking at the surface.
Mm-hmm.
But under the ground, it flows more like water. And so you can have these tunnels so that they are more flexible and can move with this flow of the energy that's coming from underground. And it's not as if it's like fracturing like up on top where it moves 11 feet. It doesn't work like that. So these potentially are safer than being on the freeway up top.
Yeah,
how's that?
I put in a story that I found back from Wired. But before I get to it, it's interesting that I think that maybe now we need to create a new topic called Tesla's Boring Tunnels. Because I have a feeling there's going to be a fair amount of work on this. Although Elon says he's only spending 2-3% of his time on this.
It's going to be a long road for him to start getting permission from the city and county of Los Angeles to dig holes all over the place.
Guess what's going to happen? Just like Hyperloop.
He'll
develop the technology and Dubai will come along and say, you know, we really could use one of these. Because another thing that this can do is this basically can be turned into a vacuum very easily. Because you have to make it so thick to stay, keep the water out and the water table, you basically just then suck the air out and you got a Hyperloop.
Right. And it looks about to be the same as the Hyperloop that I saw them building in Nevada.
Hopefully he doesn't run into any methane pockets or anything else with all of his 30 levels of
I'm
of
sure this
drilling.
Will go without any issues at all. It'll all be fine.
He talked about having to make a tunnel that will hold back 5x atmospheric pressure to mm-hmm. keep the water out, because there's a lot of water down there.
A lot
there.
Of water.
Yeah.
Well, not really here, but in a lot of places.
There used to be a lot of water.
We used to have water.
Well, there's aquifers and there's all sorts of things that you'll run into, so that will likely slow the process down. But at the same time,
there's
we were talking...
a lot of things that are going to slow this process down. I love his visionary aspect. Do not get me wrong. I think it is amazing to see video of 30 layers of tunnels with hundreds of tunnels crisscrossing. I would love to see that more than anyone. It is so not going to happen in any lifetime of anybody we know or have spawned to the extent
so
that
sad.
He has put in this video.
I like that he's really thinking forward, because the reality he sees is that with Tesla being successful, number one, pushing autonomous vehicles, and many other manufacturers also pushing autonomous vehicles, that when we have a shared ride system, Uber or Lyft-like system, with autonomous driverless vehicles, that the cost to move from wherever you are to where you want to go is going to be so much reduced that it would be cheaper than getting on the bus, not to mention the amount of inconvenience that requires. And then when it becomes that much cheaper, everybody using like $1 to go, you know, a 20-minute drive to get to, I don't know, wherever you're going, a lot more people will be using vehicles and the traffic is going to get incredibly bad.
Is it? But that's the thing. We talk about this all the time. Like, what? Which is it? Which is it, Elon? Is it there's a ton less cars because no one's going to need to own a car and we're all going to use cars more efficiently? Or we're going to build 30 layers of tunnels and there's going to be a car for everyone. Like, I'm going to have somebody's going to have an infant in the year. Let's call it 2040. I don't know, because it's better than 2020. I was going to use 2020, but that's coming up on us, right? And as soon as that infant is born, you right. buy him an electric vehicle, right? And
they don't buy anything.
Or he gets a pass to an electric vehicle and he's like zipping around to daddy daycare and to the music store.
Well, as long as he can walk and press his finger on the door.
I just want to know which future Elon sees, right? Because he's actually giving us a path to two futures. Oh, my God. There's so many people. Like, is this the 1,000-year thing? First off, let's be completely honest.
Completely
the
honest.
Earth, unless everybody on the planet is going to move into one city. Right? This is not necessary.
Well, most of the people on the planet do live in Los Angeles.
I believe that's actually inaccurate.
I
was on the
number.
Freeway this morning. It felt like it.
So your point is an interesting one, which was the most disturbing thing. It was all good times, and we're going to talk a lot more about what he said. But when he said he thinks that there will actually be more congestion and more cars because of the dropping cost of Uber-like thing. Everybody else that I've read on this says that's not true. Yes, the cost will get low, and yes, you'll have personalized transport, and yes, you will want to take your car instead of the bus, but because of the efficiencies of speed and the fact that these things don't crash and they can go very fast and then everybody spawns out there and then they leave, that we'll need less cars. So now I'm confused as well, Tom.
Right.
Are there going to be more carry cars or less carry cars? Well,
what's the deal?
Maybe this is the result of many months of a couple of people at SpaceX working half-time and a whole group of interns working on this project. And they've kind of thought this through and come up with scenarios. And that's, you know, maybe this is an evolving plan.
Right. But in this scenario, if we have 30 times more transportation corridors, let's call them,
yeah,
right? And it's really just about speed and efficiency. Are we going to have 30 times more people living in Los Angeles? Because I'll tell you this, it doesn't matter how efficient the traffic is. I don't want all those people here. Like, that just doesn't seem very pleasant for a lot of reasons, like housing. I don't want the whole place to be a giant 50-story megalopolis. I'm not looking to live in, what was that movie, Brazil?
Yeah.
I'm just not looking for that sort of doomsday kind of situation.
Well, there are these things called hyperbuildings that were already envisioned back in the 50s or the 60s, which are literally 300-story towers that contain everything. It's literally a city.
I like nature.
Yeah, that's true. But unfortunately, with
seven billion
people on the planet, and to my knowledge, I think a million people are born, whatever, babies are born like every few hours.
Most of them in your hospitals.
So Tom isn't happy about this.
I didn't say that I wasn't happy, but we're going to, and you talked about earthquakes.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And we have another story here from a very long time ago in Wired magazine, because it was about the earthquakes in the Caldecott Tunnel. And I did a little bit of research about the old Caldecott Tunnel.
So let's just say what the Caldecott Tunnel is.
This is currently an east-west highway through the Berkeley Hills between Oakland and Orinda, California. It has four bores. It started as
four tubes of traffic, yes.
Two going one way, two going the other way,
right.
Two going east, the other two going west.
That's the current status.
Right, right. And it was built originally in 1937 as a two-bore tunnel. So this thing has been around for a very long time.
Survived a lot of earthquakes.
And in 2013, they opened the fourth bore. Now, these tunnels, you think about them, you're like, oh my God, they got to be huge. They're 3,800 feet long, 300 feet long. They have varying sizes, but they're in that ballpark of
three quarters of a mile.
Not very long.
Right.
Let's call them not very long. And the newest one took 3 years to cut less than a mile.
How long did it take to do the first two bores?
The first two bores took 8 years.
Yeah.
So one and two in 1937.
Yes.
Right? 1929 to 1937, they managed to cut two of them. In the 73 years since then, they've managed to cut that down to 3 years.
Yes.
And it's actually not even much of a cut because that's for one bore. What I'm saying is the technology hasn't moved that far forward. I don't know how expensive these things were, but these are the problems with this boring. Now, I believe that may have been through a little bit more rock, and maybe as you go deeper, you get less rock. I don't know the particulars of it, but that's just to give you a general idea of how difficult it is to build a tunnel less than a mile long, and he's talking about hundreds of miles crisscrossing.
But that's what he said. He exactly said the same thing. Like, $1 billion for a mile taking years is ridiculous. Here's how I'm going to reduce it.
Yeah.
So he's actually, you know, he's said we can do this.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's cool, but I think, again, like, it's somewhere in the middle, and probably not even somewhere in the middle. It's probably like, okay, we have a couple of tunnels, and we have thousands of tunnels. Well, let's have a few tunnels.
Yeah, and see, I agree with you. I think that that video is very cool with the little carry car things, but I don't really see much of the point of that. If I've got this network of cars that drive everywhere, just put a giant Hyperloop there. Because really what I want to do is not drive through LA so much as drive past LA. I want to go from San Diego to San Francisco, and I do not want to drive through LA because there's a lot of people there.
Yeah.
So just go on the Hyperloop, and then Hyperloop goes boom underneath the city, and then back up the other side and can go at full speed the entire way.
And he said that tunnels have no distance limitation. So they can be LA to Washington, D.C. But I understand what you're saying, Tom, and it makes total sense. But can we think back? It's December 2015, or better yet, November 2015, and no one has ever successfully re-landed a rocket. It's expensive to put satellites into space. People say Elon's crazy. He's going to try and land a rocket back on the planet. Are you nuts? That was November 2015. We are now April, May. Actually, it's May 1st, 2017. A little less. It's like a year and what? Four months?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's so boring. Not boring, but boring to watch a SpaceX landing that the people announcing the SpaceX landing don't even sound excited.
They're yawning. That's what he's... So your point is that perhaps what appears to be science fiction and ridiculous today could become science fact tomorrow.
But I think there's a big difference because we all figured eventually just... And again, I don't have an issue with his vision of it, right? I think his vision of it is amazing. Having tunnels underground from LA to New York and the Hyperloop, all that stuff I think is amazing. And I think it's important for somebody like him to be having these thought sort of this time to think, right?
Yeah.
These thought experiments and be able to put a little bit of money, or in his case a lot of money, sort of
behind. For him it's just change.
Behind the viability of these things, right?
So,
and I think it'll move the ball forward, just like, you know, landing rockets is going to move the ball forward. But again, 30 levels of tunneling, and I want to know what future we're talking about. Like, is it less cars, more people? We can't sustain 30 billion people on this earth in any form of sort of awesome
transportation. These tunnels aren't
going to
make people.
No, I understand that.
I think you misunderstood.
But what's the point then? Are the 10 million people just going to be so privileged that they have to be everywhere in 2 minutes? Like, is that the whole situation?
Well, I know one thing for sure. If we go up to Elon's garage up there
Elon's
Bel Air.
Garage. We should have a show called Elon's Garage.
Elon's Garage, it's boring because all it has is Teslas. So if we're in Elon's garage, you know what's going to be in Elon's garage?
Elon?
An elevator shaft that takes his Tesla down as far as it needs to go so it can enter a tunnel that goes to SpaceX or to LAX or to whatever.
That just makes Elon sound like an evil...
Five favorite restaurants. And how much would Elon pay for that? How much would any of the other people in Bel Air pay for that? I have my own tunnel.
What we need is another elitist system on the planet. That sounds great, Robert.
So the question that I'm trying to get to is... How much would somebody pay for that? And is this economically viable? Is Elon going to be able to sell this concept to the Larry Pages and the Sergey Brins of the world, and they go for it, and they work out the kinks? They're the ones who have to deal with the tunnel that kind of collapses or that gets shifted in an earthquake or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then this thing in 15 years becomes, oh yeah, of course we have tunnels. Let's go to Mexico City. Let's go to Mexico City from LA and never leave the planet's surface.
So it's another elitist transportation system that he's building?
Potentially.
You've made this sound even worse than it was at the beginning of this show.
Thinking the exact opposite of that, which I wanted to get to about 20 minutes ago, but you guys wouldn't shut up, see the economics of single car transport making this particularly useful. That's why I still think it's the right thing, but it's a Hyperloop, it's mass transport, it's your Amazon, it's freight, it's maybe a whole bunch of cars getting moved across, but you just driving underneath a tunnel like that is pretty expensive. Although, you know, lots of cities do it. They do it in the harbors, they do it in lots of cities. So if he can reduce the price, then you probably will see more of them. I think we need to move on because we spent a lot of time on that.
Oh, that was not boring at all, though.
But Chris Anderson asked him this. Why would you go under the ground when everybody's now getting excited about flying aircraft again? And his answer to that was, first of all, it's going to freak people out. This idea of you flying cars over the top of you, this is not an anxiety-reducing situation when there is a 10-ton truck flying over the top of you.
And
you're going to be thinking, is that hubcap going to come off and cut my head off?
First off, why are there hubcaps?
I don't know.
Was hubcaps really a thing in this conversation? Or did somebody put this in these show notes? Like, did Elon actually say hubcap?
It was a funny thing.
What is wrong with
it? Something might fall off. It doesn't have to be a hubcap, but maybe you flick.
We live near an airport, a couple airports. Right. They're all over the place. LA had one of the most of airports around at
absolutely,
one point, right?
Yes.
And like, I don't sit around like, oh, is that airplane going to fall on my head?
Well, you know, Tom, do planes have hubcaps?
No. I actually have no idea.
Because the hubcap came off a plane and killed somebody.
The only thing I've ever heard about falling out of a plane is those frozen blue blocks of all of our urine and poo, like that get like released occasionally. and for sure, I don't want one of those coming through my roof.
Is any of this truth?
I've heard that.
Tom, we're talking. You and I have played golf together a lot of times.
Have we?
We've gone to that little place called Woodley.
That's correct.
And there is an airport just there.
That was the airport I was speaking of.
When the planes fly over top, it kind of freaks me out. Now I want you to think about that situation where everybody has a plane and they're flying constantly. This is not an anxiety-reducing situation. Yes.
I bet you that there would be a ton more regulation if every one of us had a car that would fly. Now, they don't even check your headlights anymore. Nobody gives a damn what your car's condition is. But if your car flew, what's the likelihood that people would not maintain their cars? A wheel will fall off. Anything could go wrong.
Do we own these cars? So the whole thing about this flying car thing, right, it's another car share service. So then I have to trust that Uber is actually maintaining their cars. And, you know, because the Uber guy appears to be a little bit crazy, maybe I don't trust Uber to be maintaining their planes properly.
Maybe not.
Again, I'm not super concerned like about a hubcap falling off. And again, these planes, my guess is they're going to fly over the streets. That's what I would do. I would make it like you fly over the streets. I'm not walking in the middle of the street.
So you're talking about like Blade Runner when the vehicles were.
Yeah.
I think it's crazy to put everybody up in the sky. I think it's too energy intensive. I like the boring idea. And I even like what Elon said. My favorite quote from this whole thing was when he talked about, we have a pet snail called Gary.
Gary.
So Gary is capable of currently going 14 times faster than a tunnel boring machine.
Gary's moving.
We want to beat Gary.
And the funny thing about that is you know what that is a reference to, right?
SpongeBob.
So he's got kids. My guess is these are Elon's kids. They have a pet snail. They watch the SpongeBob, and they name their snail Gary.
Hey, you know, a lot of us have kids and can relate to a story like that. It makes Elon kind of a
I've never had
guy.
A pet snail, but I bet they're fascinating.
Well, let's talk about Tesla now, because we're talking about the boring company.
Okay.
We talked about flying cars, so Tom's against boring holes and he's for flying cars.
No, did I say that?
No! Yeah, without hubcaps.
Maybe I did.
And now we're going to move on to Tesla. He said, what's happening at Tesla? He says, first of all, Model 3 is due for release in July.
Oh my God, I want one. Can I have mine? Can I have it now?
Very soon.
How about now?
And then he talked about autonomy, and he made this grand statement that this is not going to have LiDAR and it's not going to have anything fancy. It's just going to have optical cameras. And with optical cameras, you can become a supervillain of driving.
Superhuman.
Because right now, roads and everything is based on optics. You are driving because you are seeing and you are driving because of it. And he's like, if you do the cameras well, then you're done. That you can become 10x better than a human just with the cameras they have. It will make you superhuman. You don't need LiDAR.
Explain to me, the novice, as if I don't know what I'm talking about, and maybe I do, maybe I don't. What is the difference in the system that he is talking about for the Model 3 and the system that's currently in your car right now? Is there a difference?
No, same system.
It's the same system, right?
Same system.
When he says it's not going to have LiDAR, I don't think any of us assumed it was going to have LiDAR to begin with.
Chris Anderson was talking about comparing Tesla's autonomy to other vehicle manufacturers and other autonomous company methods. And he's like, you know, is it going to be enough? And Elon said, with optics, you can do everything. And, you know, I watched this last night, maybe midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. I was very excited. And then I got in the car this morning, right? I'm driving over here. I made a few notes.
While you were driving?
While I was driving. Well, actually, was I driving?
I don't know. Were you?
Elon was driving.
You shouldn't have been making notes. You're supposed to be paying attention, Robert.
And I thought, okay, that's very interesting. And as I'm driving, again, I'm coming to a rightward sweeping turn, and the car is veering towards the left, and I'm driving over the little buttons on the side of the road, and it goes a little further over to the left, and I'm now driving off the highway in the sort of like stop
your driving lane. Or Elon's driving at this point.
Elon has been driving all this time. And I'm getting nervous, and then it
You're
gets
only
back
getting
in.
Nervous now?
Yeah, I'm well. And it wasn't good after breakfast. And then the car recenters itself. And then as I'm driving, I'm watching and I'm seeing, wow, are those wavy lines? Oh shoot. Is this like am I going like the Mel route? And the wavy lines a little bit, and the car's kind of like, you know, it's going a little too far one side, a little too far the other side, and as I'm watching the road, right, I'm facing into the sun. It's not great conditions. I don't actually see when the car starts flashing the little flag that says
"Help me,
hold steering wheel," and then the white bezel around the around the binnacle display starts flashing. I'm watching where the car's going. I'm like, this is not good. And all of a sudden, I get the red flashing. We're shutting off autopilot signal. And that was very interesting.
Why did you not react sooner on your own there, buddy?
I was watching the car, and I was watching the road like a hawk. I wasn't watching the binnacle display.
Right, but you didn't have your hands on the wheel. You weren't like...
Oh, I was right there ready to grab everything. Right.
But were you testing to see like how to getting into an accident your car would get
you? I've done like a 1,600 miles of testing so far. So I'm going to post that video. But it tells me that if they're ready to take a car from a parking lot in California to a parking lot in New York without the driver touching any controls, that's what Elon said.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking by November, December? All right, man. Bring it on. I feel better now because so far I'm not feeling so better buying this newer version of Tesla with all of these auto driving features.
So he specifically said, well, how far along are you? And he said, yes, by this year, by November, December, we're going to do this cross-country thing and the driver will touch the steering wheel not one time is the plan.
Right.
And he went further to say 2 years until full autonomy, where regulation and everything will allow it to occur. Which
right.
has ticked
Sleeping
off a
in the
number,
car. Sleeping in the car.
It's ticked off a number of people because some people said, I paid extra money for full autonomy and I'm not going to see that full autonomy for another 2 years. To those people, I say, it was very clear on the website that this is going to take a while to get rolled out. There are people on Reddit and other places that are losing their lunch saying, I can't believe that I bought this car that has full autonomous capability and it's not going to be full autonomous for 2 more years. I look at it the other way. It could be full autonomous in 2 years. It's unbelievable. I wasted whatever it was, $5,000
right.
getting that stuff, but I did it knowing I just want to be part of this experiment as this new stuff rolls out. I want to play with it. So for those people who are ticked off, I'm sorry. It was clear that this is not going to be on day one. It's going to take a long time to roll out.
But you made this note somewhere in these show notes about the fact that you leased your car. So you got a 3-year lease.
Yes.
Right? And you paid full $5,000 for a 3-year lease, which seems like it should have been less if you're only leasing the car on some levels, right? Like $5,000 is you're going to have it for 20 years, theoretically. But you paid it monthly. I guess part of it is monthly, but how much did it increase the cost? And the chances are you're going to return this lease before it's in full effect.
Very insightful. So again, I was thinking exactly the same thing. If you leased the car when I leased it and you bought the full autonomy, there's a really good chance that you will use close to zero of that technology by the time the 3-year lease
is up. You've paid for nothing.
So you've actually paid for nothing. So again, if you're out there and if you're thinking I'm going to get this Tesla or I'm going to lease it or I'm going to buy it, I wouldn't turn that stuff on unless you're somebody like me that's like, but I want to play with everything when it turns on. But can I just check something?
Oh,
is
I know
this thing on?
I know what's coming.
I bought all that stuff so that every time there's an update, I could use the new autonomous driving feature that comes on. But is this thing on, Tom?
That's on. Yeah, I can hear that.
I still have wavy lines and I can't use any of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, this is a record. It took him about 35 minutes to tap the microphone and ask if this thing is on. We all knew it was coming, though, right?
Yeah, this is becoming a weekly event.
So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, what this means for you, if you've got a Model 3 and you're going to start configuring it soon, which could happen in the next few months, and there's an extra charge for full autonomy, those of you that are leasing, those of you that are thinking about this, understand that it is at least 2 years before full autonomy will be coming. So you need to consider, maybe I shouldn't buy that until it's actually going to get turned on, which is a few years away.
And I would be curious. So I don't know how it works at Tesla with the lease situation, right? So you're leasing it. I would lease it and not turn it on. until you know that it's going to be, I don't know, 20 or 30% of its effective, whatever that number is for you as a person. But
right.
But what I don't know is, let's say you're leasing a car and you're a year and a half into it, and you have a year and a half left, and you want to turn it on because they've released X update on it.
Yes.
Is it a monthly charge because it's a lease? Are you paying like $45 a month? We should find this information out, right? Or are you have to pay $5,000 that day, and they sort of prorate that over the next 18 months of your lease that's left? We should find that out.
I don't know. But you know what I don't – what I think people should not do
yeah.
is join a freaking class action lawsuit against Tesla over this kind of nonsense.
But I think if you but again, like, you're a very special case, Mel.
Thank you.
Right? Because you sort of, again, you have this show and you want to have this technology and you can afford to kind of play with it. You have this show. It makes a little bit of sense for us. It gives us something to talk about. But if I'm the average Joe and I paid for this, and it I know it was in written, it's going to take a while. We might have this, we might have that. But it still felt like it was coming sooner rather than later. And especially if you had a lease and it added to your thing, it just feels a little wrong. I get that it...
Well,
that,
there's new stuff coming out all the time. But yes, I agree. It was in plain English, but they didn't give a timeline. And so I can see it argued both ways. To sue over it, I think, is ridiculous. But
yeah.
I think if you've got a system which is supposed to sort of do basic sort of autonomous driving and it doesn't work because of, is this thing on? Because of the wavy lines, maybe those people should be upset. We talked about it last. Like, let's continue on. Let's talk about the truck, because they said, what else is going on at Tesla? Well, the other thing that's going on at Tesla is the truck that he's going to announce. So this is the pre-announcement to the announcement in September, but he did show a teaser picture and it looked big, large, and huge.
Isn't this technically a follow-up to the pre-announcement to the announcement?
Yes.
So there was the pre-announcement, and then on the TED, he had another sort of follow-up announcement that we're going to make another announcement.
This is the post-pre-announcement.
the post-pre-announcement. I like that.
So he followed up with a couple of things. This truck in prototype form already exists. This truck in prototype form has already been driven by Elon Musk. This truck in prototype form that he has driven in the parking lot feels like a sports car.
Did he say that specifically?
Yes.
Yeah. He said, I have specifically driven
this. I have driven this. Okay. It's like a sports car.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's weird when you get in this truck and it drives like a sports car. It's kind of freaky.
I don't like the idea of a big, giant 65,000-pound truck driving around like a sports car, because I know what I do when I'm driving in a sports car. I'm whipping it around. I know for a fact what you do, Robert, when you're driving in a sports car. I do not want you behind the wheel of a Tesla semi.
I can see that Robert's going to have a new career, and he's like, this is so fun. I'm going to be a long-haul trucker, and he's going to do sliders with his semi-trailer.
I don't do slides with my car, except in the ice when it's not intended.
But he specifically said this is not a short whole truck. This is a long haul truck. What?
Which goes counter to the conversation that we had the last time we were together and we're talking about the semis. Is we thought that 80%, you know, I did that, whatever that stat was, where 80% of it's sort of shorter haul.
Right, under 250 miles.
Under 250 miles. And he said no. But I guess if you build something that can do long haul, then you can cover 100% of the market.
I'm sure that he gave... I forgot the name of the guy who was at Tesla, then went to Daimler, now back to Tesla, and for 16 months or 17 months has been leading the semi team. I'm sure he gave that guy,
I think it's a full team,
some pretty big stretch goals and said, look, I want everything. And it sounds like they've delivered. I mean, these are the things that he said, that it will, quote, outperform diesel trucks of today. This is lower down where there was the Tesla semi article from Teslarati. It will have more torque than any diesel semi. And, quote, if you had a tug-of-war competition, the Tesla semi would tug the diesel.
Uphill.
Uphill. Uphill. I mean, like, he's like, no holes barred. This thing is awesome. And, you know, if I'm a guy, I can only imagine.
You are a guy.
I have sat behind the wheel of a 18-wheeler, and I have shifted it from, like, first to second of like whatever it was, 12 gears.
They're automatics now. Did you know that?
I did. But this was back in the 70s. A friend of mine and we knew this other guy who drove big trucks, and he let us sit behind it. And it was like, whoa, this thing is enormous. And so it's not easy to drive. It is not, you know, it's like he was talking about the torque curve. It's not a bell curve, but it's a hump. It's a hill. And you, every time you shift, you have to shift and you get another torque curve. He says, but with this one, 100% torque all the time makes moving a very heavy load really, really easy.
I want to see the size of the brakes on this puppy because it's going to get up to speed quite quickly and there's going to be a learning curve.
It'll have regenerative braking, right? It'll have engine braking, which will be a bonus, right? Although, you know, truckers already use engine braking to a certain extent to keep the...
Right, and it's going to use that for regeneration of right. the brakes. He said this is, quote, a very spry truck.
So somebody on here wrote that the Proterra, the big EV bus, yes. right, has can do 250 miles and is 29,000 pounds with a 440 kilowatt hour battery. So if you extrapolate this to a 500-mile run, and I did a little bit of research,
yeah.
and it feels like 450 to 500 seems like a reasonable amount of daily driving for a semi, a little bit longer, you know, as far as getting tired. And obviously, if you're in a dual driving situation, you can double that if,
right.
you, if you really wanted to. You would need, at a 65,000-pound truck and 450 miles, you're looking at like an 880 kilowatt-hour battery. And I guess at the beginning of the recording of this show, episode one, we would have all been like, that's insane. And now we're probably like, all right, yeah, that makes sense. Because if you think about it, it's eight Model S power packs.
Right.
Eight or nine, side by side, flat on a trailer
yeah.
that you then just put a cargo container on the top of and you walk away. It seems completely viable.
I wonder what the utility executives are feeling right now, in the sense that this thing has to be charged, not like overnight at yeah. a supercharger, but like charged in an hour at yeah. a supercharger. That's going to need like its own nuclear power plant to well, yeah. charge it.
Yeah, I mean, like a truck stop, if you have 50, 100, 200, 300 of these trucks going through in a day, that's a lot of, I don't know, power pack storage availability,
that's
a lot
huge.
Of stuff of That's going to need to be generated. So, yeah, we'll get into situations about, like, peaker plants and where these things will have to be located,
right.
closer to grid or gigantic solar farms,
yeah.
if this is the case. But it's, again, it's a total game changer.
On Reddit and other places, the smart people that are talking about this saying, you know, this actually now makes sense for a battery swap. Because of these huge amounts of energy that you'll need, and if you've got 10 of these trucks at the same time, it just starts to get to be a little bit of a problem. So a battery swap would actually make sense here. So they've charged them up at the solar panel down the road, and then they bring them over, and your truck comes in, and you
right.
change drivers, and you put a new battery in, and off you go.
And again, like Tom said many months ago, maybe the first iteration of this will be going from Gigafactory 1 to Tesla Fremont factory, and that could bring sleds for Model 3, Model S, Model X. You could plug those sleds with the batteries on them into the truck. You know, so again, Tesla typically throws something out there, not haphazardly, but then refines it over a period of 2-3 years. And I expect the same goes for this. But the whole bottom line of this is there is an urgency both at Tesla, at Elon, SpaceX, to get this stuff out there, to push everyone else to move in this direction.
Yeah.
And it's working. It's working. How many electric cars have been announced since the Model S came out and people thought, oh, that thing's going to sputter out and nobody's going to really buy it. It's not economically
yeah.
viable. And, you know, there is so much egg on so many faces at this point.
It's true. And 2020 is going to be an amazing year in transportation.
Yeah, Tesla has, at least here in the US, I don't know how it is in other countries, basically decimated the elite car, electrical, luxury car market.
Yeah.
It has just taken it. Thank you very much. And it's also taking the luxury SUV market as well. So this truck sounds absolutely fascinating. I can't wait for the September event. Boy, I wish we could be there. Tesla, can we have a little card that says we can come, please?
Please, yeah, like a press card.
Can I do it one more time?
No, don't do it. Okay, good.
Hello, Tesla press office.
Please.
We are Tesla Nation, and I know at least six of your employees who listen to our show, and maybe more.
Which event would you rather go to?
Every one of them.
The next Model 3 event or the Semi event?
Well, you know, the next Model 3 event has now been announced. It didn't get in the show notes.
It has.
It's
I missed
out.
That.
Do you guys want to see
out.
My invitation?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't have it.
It says if you...
I would like to see my invitation.
Sorry, this is not on the show notes. I found this out late, But if you got five people to order a Tesla from October to January, you are now invited, and the emails are out, to the Tesla Model 3 unveil, which is going to be June, I believe it's 2 and 3. I'm going to look at my calendar.
I actually did see that, yes. So you have to have sold lots and lots of cars with your referral system, and then you get to go to this event.
And it's going to be Friday, June 2nd or Saturday, June 3rd. They said that the tour is exclusively for referral program winners. Quote, join us for an exciting day with fellow Tesla owners, including a factory tour, a private Model 3 viewing, gourmet lunch, and a Q&A with Tesla chief designer Franz von Holzhausen.
Yes, please. Thank you. Can I, where do I sit? Where should I stand during this event? I'm ready to go. Hello?
That's a month away.
Yeah.
So do you think they're going to stream this live? It's going to be like a big live event, or is this all private, private?
They'll probably record it, and I'm sure they'll put it out later, because of course you want the 400,000 people, or at least the people who hold 400,000 reservations, to get all juiced up and get all, you know, excited to keep their reservation. Yeah, Tom's trying to click on the RSVP, but this is the Teslarati site. And
I want the link to work.
It's not going to work.
Okay,
Tom.
So if you got invited to this,
yes,
I am more than available. As let's refer to me as your plus one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you're out there, you've had a bunch of people refer. I wasted my two referrals on a suitcase that I've yet to get yet from Tesla. Still waiting. Thank you very much, Tesla. And so please feel free to add any of us as the plus one. As you guys know, I'm the fun one, so it should probably be me.
Bjorn, go straight to Tom.
Mel is replicating a lot of viruses. You don't want him to be anywhere near you. Robert will be on a shift saving people's lives that day. So
no, I'm
off.
We
can't take you away.
I'm already off
from that situation. And so more importantly, if you are a Tesla employee and you're listening to the show right now, I don't know. Do some hacking into the computer code system and just throw us on the list.
Yeah, we're only three extra dudes.
Yeah, we won't take any pictures. We promise not to talk about it. Mel is actually becoming super, super like stoked and attached to his wavy lines. He actually loves them, and he's not going to complain about them anymore.
Here's a picture of the official Tesla hotel that the invitees will be staying at in San Francisco.
I hate to say this, but that's not at all interesting.
Tom, you asked a specific question. Let me go back to it because it was a long time ago.
Oh, my goodness.
You said if you got to go to the Model 3 event, which we just heard about, or the semi-truck event, which one would you choose? Go.
I would for sure choose the Model 3 event because I am not in the market for a semi-truck, but I would really – is this thing on? Can I have my car, please? I want to know if they're getting – released in July. Like, there's some rumors that there's going to be some cars sold in July.
Right.
Let's walk that backwards a little bit. When does Design Studio open?
I would say it's going to be next month.
I would say after this event.
Or like at this event today?
No.
I think it's going to be before that.
June 2. It'll probably open June 2.
So they're going to only have one month to like configure all of the cars that they want to make.
He said in the past it would be a couple of months before the first one comes off. And so if July 1st is the first one.
So it's now.
June, May. Yeah, it should be opening.
Today.
Just check. Maybe it's
so remember, they're going to make maybe 1,000 cars in July and August.
And they're going to be black and standard.
Right.
You're
going to
get what you get.
They're going to be employee cars. They might be loaner cars. They might be just cars to distribute out to all the Tesla stores to show people. So I'm not excited and anticipating that you or me or Mel or anybody
because you got a new car
who stood in line is going to get a Model 3 in July. I don't think we're going to see Model 3s until late September, October at the earliest.
That's a while, but I'm good. I can wait.
All right, you can wait.
You still have credits on your Costco gas card?
Let's keep going here.
That's hurtful.
So what else is going electric? So this is what Elon said. Well, he said eventually all roofs will be solar. It'll take a while because you're not going to put a new roof on every house right now. You're going to wait till it sort of wears out.
And unless you're Mel.
Since they last 20 years or so. So 40 to 50 years, every roof will be solar. Basically, every standard house has enough solar generating capacity to run itself, is what he said. Mm-hmm. Coming out soon, very soon, is going to be the Tesla solar roof, but not the four different roofie roofs. Right. He said they were only going to start with two roofie roofs, and he didn't say which two of the roofie roofs it's going to be.
I'm sure it's going to be the plain glass roof.
I would assume so, that it's not going to be the hard-to-make Tuscan weird thing. It'll be the plain glass roof, which is fine, because that's the one I want out the back there.
I want to hear from anybody in Tesla Nation. You know, a lot of companies, before they bring out a product, they do testing, right? They question people in groups. Would you like this? What do you think of that? I wonder what kind of market research Tesla has done to decide which roofs they're going to put out. I wonder if they've contacted anybody or done any kind of market research on this.
This is the way Tesla works. Tesla's like, hey, we built this cool stuff. Who wants it? And everybody gets in line and everybody buys it.
It's the same as Apple and Steve Jobs. I'm not going to ask you what you want. I'm going to tell you what you want. Here is an iPhone. Thank you. Right. We're done.
Here's your roof. Would you like one? You wouldn't. Let's see if your neighbor would, because we're pretty sure somebody on your street does.
Hopefully the Tesla roof comes out soon, because I really need one on the back shed out there, and it will be fun and exciting. They also asked him, what about this battery thing? So you're going to need a lot of batteries to electrify the world. And so they showed a little video of the little, and I assume it was the 2170 cells coming off the line. Boom, 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 really fast. And he said, you
Chris
know,
Anderson
is this speeded
asked
up?
Him.
It's like, no, it's actually slowed down. In fact, when we get this at full capacity, at full speed, the number of batteries coming off the line will be so fast, you'll have to have a strobe light to see them.
Yeah, he said they are a blur. When the production line is running at regular speed, the batteries are moving so fast, it's a blur.
So he also brought up the question, okay, you want to electrify the world. This is the way we go forward. This is how we use renewable energy. And we need renewable energy. And a couple of statements he made there before I get to how many gigafactories. He said, it is inevitable that there will be renewable energy because of the fact that if you don't have renewable energy, you will run out of energy. So therefore, it is inevitable. You have to have renewable energy at some point. We're just trying to speed it up. Gigafactories do this. Strobe lights, they're coming off the line so fast, you won't believe it. We'll need about 100 gigafactories. He's this time said, we're not exactly sure how many need, but it's not 10. And it's not 1,000. We think it's about 100. And Chris said, so are you going to build some more? And he goes, yes. And they'll be announcing more soon.
Very soon, apparently. And then I have another question, hopefully a short answer from you guys. How many states you think are going to be clamoring to get number two, seeing how number one, or I guess technically we're talking about number three? Like, is it two or three, right?
Because it would be
two,
number three comes next.
Two is the solar factory
in,
right?
Buffalo, New York.
Not just states, but countries are going to be clamoring. Please come here and pay no tax, and we'll give you something else, a sausage dog.
I
would like a sausage dog.
I imagine one factor is being near lithium. So that's why we've been talking about Perth, Australia.
Go Perth. Go Perth, mate.
Which is also the home of the first fully autonomous electric bus system.
I did not know that.
We'll talk about that next week.
Ooh, teaser.
The other place, you know, somewhere like Chile, huge amounts of lithium there in the Chile.
Yeah, and Bolivia.
All of these places
Peru.
You would think would make sense to have Gigafactory 2, 3,
but
4, and 5.
But not huge amounts
China.
Of the cash in Chile.
No, but
China for
China
I mean,
needs
it
like
the
six
most
of them.
Sense for it to go to China next.
They have the people, they have the space, they have the lithium,
what
they have the money.
At that point, what Tesla needs is not their money. He just needs their okay.
Yeah.
He's bringing his own money. We'll build it.
That's not
just
100%
okay.
accurate, because that's the thing about Tesla, right? That we'll talk about the stock price a little bit, but people are sort of, wow, Tesla's valued as much as GM, but they're not profitable at all, like in that situation. And it feels like they're more like a tech company than a car company, if we talk about. Let's just go into the stock price right now. So they're more of a tech company than a stock company.
Hey, Google, what's the price of Tesla today?
As of 12:18 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time today, the price for Tesla shares on NASDAQ is $324.16, up 3.21% from last Friday.
So it's been a good day. Apparently, the stock market has also watched the TED Talk.
Yeah, they sure have.
And so, again, people are like, how is this worth more than GM? GM has made actual money. They've made actual profits. But you have to look at it more like Amazon, where are they making profit per unit? My guess is the answer to that is yes. But they're investing so much money into gigafactories and other infrastructure type situations that they can't show a profit. But at some point, they'll be able to sort of slow down the investment burn and go to the income burn, and they will turn it around. And that's what this sort of stock price craziness is based on.
Again, well, that TED Talk, if you look at that, you say to yourself, if you're an investor, if he pulls all this stuff off, as we've said multiple times in the last few weeks, if
$1,000 a share,
this will be maybe $10,000 a share. The businesses that he's going into is multiple trillions of dollars. I don't see anybody else being able to catch up in the short term. So this stock price is going to take off. That is not a stock tip.
It is not.
Get a CAT scan if you take stock tips from me.
Yeah.
But I believe that this is going to be the most profitable, largest company in the world within a few years, 5 years.
Well, there's also a story that I put in about how the New York Times went and asked a lot of, now this is not Seeking Alpha, which I've bagged on in the past, but have talked to a lot of Tesla fans about the stock price and whether they would buy stock and such. And this is from the New York Times, the 11th and of April. And they said, so many people said, no, 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 no. It's way too overpriced right now. The fact that Tesla is worth more day by day, but definitely today worth more than GM and Ford. But they say that now it's really too high, too expensive, and we can't justify buying into it at this point. And I wonder how many people are really buying. Who is buying right now?
If it's a pure manufacturing company play,
yeah,
completely correct.
Yes.
Right. If it's a tech play,
right,
which it is, and a big time Amazon, because people have been saying this about Amazon for 20 years, myself included, like, when is Amazon going to actually start to make some money? When is Amazon going to start to make some money? And if you look at it, they make a lot of money. They just spend a lot of money on investing,
right,
and building new things, interesting
and
things, right? And eventually, everybody's going to only be able to get stuff from Amazon. Like, that's the only place.
Also, Elon was sort of like, and we've talked about this on the show, sort of envisioned that Elon would depart Tesla after Model 3 to go on to the Boring Company and God knows what other ideas he has percolating in his back pocket. But he said on the TED Talk, I'm not going anywhere. I'll be at Tesla until I die.
So let's talk about SpaceX, because it didn't stop there. So he said, Chris Anderson, okay, let's talk about SpaceX. We're going to go over everything you're doing. And why are we going to go into space is one of sort of the big philosophical question. And again, Tom is going to go off here, but his point was, we have to. It's inevitable that we would have renewable energy, and Tesla is trying to accelerate that for a lot of good environmental reasons. But that's going to happen. But us being a space-bearing species is not. And he went through the fact that, you know, we put a man on the moon in 1969, and then we had a space shuttle that could only do low Earth orbit. And if we don't push this, then we're going to forget how to do this. And it's very important for him existentially, and I think for a lot of us, that this is an important thing for humanity to do. He brought up the fact that in Egypt, they built these giant obelisks called pyramids, and they forgot how to do it towards the end of their time.
Obelisks, right? And pyramids are different.
Oh. In the Roman Empire, they made these incredible aqueducts and all these systems that over time they forgot how to do. And it was very clear that he had this existential angst that if we follow the technology curve, it doesn't get better all the time without significant effort. So he wants to put in the effort to take us to Mars, to be a spacefaring group.
And we used to, as a society, depend on our government to push the space program. It was always government, right? And it's not a high priority for the government because they're working, at least for our government, because they're working on other sort of social things, trying to make sure that we're all taken care of, and I get that. So it's good for it to be pushed forward. I get his aspect. I get his thought process as it pertains to going to Mars. Again, I don't necessarily think he should be spending an inordinate amount of time or resources on it, but it's his time and it's his resources, so have at it.
And here's how he's going to have at it. He showed a rocket, one of the rockets that's going to be used to make a spacefaring and send lots of people there. And I remember a number of months ago, there was that beautiful animation of lots of rockets flying up and refueling and going to Mars and coming back. He showed another picture of the size of one of these rockets, and it was quite large. This rocket is 40 stories tall. It has four times the thrust of the Saturn moon rocket. Four times the Saturn moon rocket, which was at the time and still is the biggest, baddest rocket that has ever been created.
Yes.
And so this is equal to the thrust of 120 747s at full throttle. In fact, he said you could take a fully loaded 747 with people and crew and crap and put it in one of these rockets and send it into space.
Those people will not be happy.
That would be like...
You're on a commuter flight to New York or something, and all of a sudden they jam you in a spaceship and send you up in the air.
Yeah. To the moon, Alice. To the moon.
Well, soon after you create this rocket, that rocket will appear like a rowboat compared to what is coming next.
Right.
So this gigantic rocket that he's envisioning and is going to build is going to be tiny compared to the ones that come after that. So Chris asked him, when is this interplanetary going to Mars shuffling system going to occur?
ITS.
2020?
He said 8 to 10 years, but their internal timeline is actually more aggressive than that.
Yeah, Chris Anderson went kind of blank at that moment.
Chris Anderson went blank about five times. He's like, what?
Yeah, so
and
I mean,
probably some 10 years? SpaceX employees are like, oh my God.
Well, we can think back to the Guadalajara Space Conference, which took place in the fall, where Elon was talking about this, and all... this is very dependent on our solar system, right? Earth and Mars do not circle the sun at the same rate. So the distance between Earth and Mars changes as the time of the years go around. So Mars goes around the sun more slowly, Earth more quickly, just a matter of physics. And so for us to do launches to Mars, we have to do it as the Earth is approaching Mars, as it's going around the sun. I can't remember if it's a two-year, no, it's probably like a many months period in which we can launch rockets and then get them to Mars using the least amount of time and fuel. And that's critical at this point. We're not going to travel to Mars by traversing the entire solar system past the sun, maybe in the future, but not at current level of technology. And so you have launch windows, I believe it's 2022, late 24, 28. It's sort of like every 2.8 years, I think it's something like that. And so we have a limit. And so he wants to start like a first try in like 2022. He wants to get the first people up there the next cycle. He wants to get a whole bunch of stuff up there the cycle after that. I think that we're not astrophysicists and we're not scientists who really are familiar with this.
Are you sure?
But
I've played one on TV.
There's some interesting articles, if you want to finish this up, that really show how this can happen.
So we won't go into it in detail because there's too much to cover there. But the point of this TED Talk, or the thing that I came away with, was inspiration. And I've needed a lot of inspiration in the last few months. That here's somebody who's trying to really change the world. He's trying to help humanity. He's trying to accelerate renewable energy. He has the vision, which is very positive about the world. And Chris Anderson asked him specifically, what is your motivation? You're doing all this stuff. Why? And then in the end, he said this, I want to be clear. I'm not trying to be anybody's savior, which made me sad because, like, we need a savior. I'm just trying to think about the future and not be sad, which is profound, existential. It gives you plenty of insight into this guy, which is he sees a vision of the future and he wants to make it happen. He has the money. He has the smarts. He's already doing it. I don't know if he will succeed, but boy, I want him to succeed. So I'll be doing my part to help out. So every car I buy from now on is going to be a Tesla, and every solar panel I get is going to be a Tesla, and every battery I get is going to be a Tesla, Tom.
Yeah, he's the Edison of our generation, right? He's just thinking about the future. He wants to make things better. And we need a visionary. And I'm glad that Elon is that visionary, even though I think he has some evil villain tendencies.
Oh, my
He did
goodness.
Ask Chris, in sort of tongue-in-cheek, like, this is all amazing. This is kind of crazy. Chris, you'll tell me when it's actually crazy, right? I think Elon sometimes wonders, am I going nuts here? Because I think I can do some pretty crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And everybody tells me I'm nuts.
Hopefully he doesn't look at all the press and all of the negative stuff that people are writing about his ideas, because I hate to see him sort of thwarted or stop in this endeavor. Because like I said, when I went to the SpaceX pod, Hyperloop pod competition, the hundreds of college students that were there that were amazingly enthusiastic, it's like building an army. It's amazing. People so excited, wanting to push all this forward. The amount of
you know who has armies?
Armies?
Evil geniuses.
Evil villain.
Yeah.
Henchmen, as it were.
Hey, we were trying to reduce the ridiculous length of this podcast. We've got like 20 other things that we were going to talk about. I suggest that we pick out a couple and then we do letters. There's one I want to do, since it's coming soon, is the Model 3 interior. So this is from Teslarati. So there has been a bunch more videos of Model 3s driving around. Blue ones and white ones and green ones and purple ones. And
there's been no purple ones.
There really hasn't been purple ones.
Or green ones. No.
But some of these pictures now are getting us a better look on the inside of the car. It looks like the outside of the car is basically the way we've seen it many times.
So pretty.
So there's a picture that shows of one of the blue ones. That there is no dashboard, no heads-up display. There is no bump in the sort of where you would normally have
a binnacle display.
Right. So I think it's time for us to get over it. There is an image of this center console video thing. Well, it's not center. It's off to the side. It's off to the right. And on that display, you can see that there is a big speedometer and some other stuff that takes up about a third of the left side of that display for an American car. And so that's where you're going to have to look to see your speed. And I think we just have to get over it. That's the way it's going to be. No heads-up display. It's going to be that center, big, giant landscape
thing. You guys listened to last week's show, right?
That's cool, because can I have mine? Because I'm ready. Can I have mine now? How about now? Is it ready yet?
I wish we could get you one now.
Can I have it?
Yeah.
I'm ready. Can I have it now?
I would say that, you know, if I'd almost say that if mine comes like 3 weeks before yours comes, I'd give you mine just to get you out of that car.
If you don't, I might hurt you.
Mm. So this is exactly what I was saying. And I actually sent out a tweet with a picture of my phone mounted just off to the right of the steering wheel, where I expect the left upper corner of that 15-inch horizontal display to be in the Model 3. And it's very easy. I got lots of back tweets and lots of likes, people saying, this is what I do. That's where I mount my phone. And I watch, you know, various other apps on their phone that shows speed, that shows direction. And it's really not a big deal. It's going to be fine.
It's not a big deal. Can I have it? It's cool. I don't need a heads-up display. I don't need a binnacle. I just need that one monitor in the middle. I don't need dual anymore. I don't need P right now. Can I just have it? Can I have my car? Whatever the first one, if it is, it comes in black. I don't want it in black, but cool. Whatever. Can I just have it?
I was kind of concerned when I looked at the pictures of this Model 3. Did you notice there's like duct tape over all the door seams and the trunk seam?
Yeah, they talked about that, though. That's about like the engineers working through. Remember when I taped you into a car once, Mel?
Yeah. There were a lot of wind noise, so Tom put some duct tape on it. Didn't help.
Excellent.
But I don't think that's going to be a feature of the car.
I hope not.
This is a beautiful car. What's all the duct tape? That's a thing.
Although that'd be cool. Like in the design studio, you're like, all right, I want the white exterior and I want the leopard tape.
Leopard tape.
That'd be pretty cool.
I like the bamboo dash, or at least it looked like a light tan dash.
Okay.
But who knows if that's really what's going to end up.
Vegan seats, bamboo dash, no heads-up display, no center console, no big giant hatchback. Okay, that's cool. Can I have mine?
All right, we get it.
Can we talk about the Tesla parking lot?
No, let's just move on from. Let's not talk about the Tesla parking lot. The show's an hour and a half.
We just did talk about it just then.
Oh, we did? Okay, yeah. We can't.
Can we talk about the SpaceX launch and land? Happened an hour ago, a couple of hours ago?
Sure, let's talk about that.
So SpaceX is this rocket company, and they make rockets, and they send things into space.
Hold on, they make rockets?
And then they bring them back, and they land. This time it was a very secret one for the American government, a spy satellite, probably going to be looking, I don't know, at North Korea is my guess, and they landed it. And it was cool, and this is getting boring, which is great.
Never
it's
boring.
Actually not boring at all to me, but the difference about this one that I haven't seen before is that this one came back to Cape Canaveral and landed, and they had this long-distance camera that was showing this giant rocket falling out of the air at 600 miles an hour, 1,000 kilometers an hour, and that was the first time I'm like, oh my God, they really are dropping this thing out of the sky, stopping it and landing, which is unbelievable.
Did they get the fairing back too this time?
I don't know, but they didn't put a camera on it probably because they didn't want anybody seeing what was going on. I don't think they probably had cameras on the second stage at all because they wouldn't want even SpaceX people to leak this stuff out. They don't want anybody to know the trajectory. So that was interesting about this. At first, I thought, oh, man, I'm not going to get to watch all the stuff going on. But then the reality struck when I did watch it. They showed for a prolonged period of time the first stage coming down. I've never seen it in that much detail. And I was watching these puffs of white come off the first stage. They use nitrogen to help to redirect it in addition to the fins, those waffle fins. And there were like 30, 40 discharges of this nitrogen puffs to get the thing going in the right direction. It was really good. This is probably the best re-landing of a stage one that I've ever seen.
Yeah, I came away from that video going, I much better understand the physics of what's going on and just the enormity of the task. The fact that they can do this, again, is shocking.
And it was impressive to me that, first of all, they only had one narrator, John Federsped, who's one of the design engineers. And what I thought was really impressive, I mentioned this before, is that even he sounded nonplussed when the thing landed on the ground. There was some cheers, but there wasn't that big of a group there. And this was Monday morning. Well, actually, it was Monday at 4 a.m., so I wouldn't expect that many people to come out of bed to see this one, the, like, ninth re-landing or the tenth re-landing.
One.
Yeah. So it's getting boring. We're getting our wish.
Excellent. All right, let's do apps, media, and then let's do letters. And there's a lot of letters about apps and media, but let me tell you this. My media of the week, I'm just going to tell you my media of the week. Genius. It's about Einstein. And I got it on iTunes. I don't know who put it out, who made it, but I just watched the first episode. Excellent. You know
what? It's called Genius?
It's called Genius. You know why? Because Einstein was above average.
He was indeed. Do you have an app as well or just that?
No, I was just going to stop right there.
Okay. Yeah, I think we've gotten some letters. I mentioned that this is a little bit difficult. However, this week in Los Angeles is the 25th anniversary of the LA riots.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of really good NPR and KCRW stories on the LA riots. So go check out npr.org and kcrw.com. There's Which Way LA, 50 years after the Watts riots, the Los Angeles riots, 25 years on. Lots of really, really good stuff. I'll give you my app of the week. I think it's, for me, it's the AAA app. You have all of your insurance information in that app. You can make all kinds of changes. If you need your proof of insurance because you got into a bangity-bangity in your kari-kari, that's for you, Mel.
Thank you.
Then all that information is right there in your app. So I like the AAA app, so there you have that.
Immobile Club of North America.
I'm sorry? The Automobile Association of America, Southern California Model Edition.
So my favorite app is called Epson iPrint. And I use this because I have the EcoTank printer. I bought this like a year ago.
Yes.
And now that I've put it through, I don't know how many thousands of pages, I can tell you, I have not had to replace ink or a cartridge or do anything to this printer. It was a little more expensive.
I have a lot of questions about that printer, but I'm not asking them on this show.
Yeah, I have a lot. And so it's a good printer because I was thinking about buying one.
I'm ready to buy another one. This thing is awesome. And from my phone, I can print. So I've got like an email and there's like a graph with it, like, Dr. Rosenblum, you got to finish all these charts. I'm like, oh no, I can just boom, print it right to my printer from my phone. Works great. And I started listening to another podcast after Mel. I don't know if I should hate you or love you. You got me hooked.
Thank you.
You got me hooked on S-Town. I got really into it. In fact, have you guys actually seen The Maze?
No, I didn't look at The Maze.
I have a picture of The Maze.
This is in the first episode. It's not a giveaway. There is a maze.
Yeah, I don't want to do any giveaways because I've got so many people starting to listen to this. It's great. So I have pictures of The Maze. I'll show it to you. I think I put maybe some of these into a tweet. But the bottom line is I'm listening to their pre-podcast called Serial.
Yes, which was also amazing.
Well, you know, I started getting really tired of it. I thought it was annoying.
Season one's good.
Season two is not so good.
Yeah, season one, I'm listening to it and I was getting really annoying. But at the same point, I started getting really into it. And so now I'm into it. I'm about two-thirds of the way through, and it's really quite amazing. Now there's a picture of The Maze. Beautiful. This is before it grew up. This is when the shrubbery was small. And I've actually, this is back to S-Town. I've gone to the map, and people have located the maze, and you can see it on Google Maps.
Alrighty. Let's do letters.
Let's do letters. The first letter is from Chris in Portland, who basically says, look, it's a great show. It's all good. Let's talk codes. Let's talk codes, mate. He wants to give away, he wants to use a code. Who's he going to use?
I'm going to thank Chris because he used my code, and he was saying that he loves the show, lots of laughs, and it was basically good. He bought himself a black model 60D.
Last of its kind, he called it.
Yeah.
Diego Quivero is a friend of the show, said regarding Supercharger version 3.0, he sends us to a little bloggity blog that goes through some of the mathity math that says that 350 kilowatt charging is possible even with the old current battery, which is the 18650. And so we've seen a lot about this recently, that this at first seemed like it was just too fast. You couldn't possibly do it with cooling and other things. But with some new technologies, it appears that we will be able to do this, and this will be kind of cool. And I expect that version 3.0 of Supercharger will be 350 kilowatts or more, as Elon has suggested. But probably needs to be some cooling. Paul Burton says there is a new shop in the in Australia, and it's got some superchargers in Horsham, and that's between Ballarat and Adelaide. And then I got a follow-up email from somebody saying that just as we saw this new reveal of all of these new superchargers in North America, Australia is undergoing the same thing. There's going to be a sort of a 2x of the number of superchargers along that eastern-southern corridor. This is all good news.
As a little bit of an aside, I was at a supercharger over the weekend. I was away from the supercharger getting a little bite to eat.
Yeah.
I got an idling notification saying, hey, you're about to get charged. Opened my app and just increased the charged level of my car and it went away.
Oh, that's interesting.
No bill?
I don't know yet. I'll let you know. I'll give you a follow-up. But that's what I like. I didn't get another notification about the idling, and my car started to charge again. So I think as long as it's charging, you're good.
Yeah, that's awesome. So actually, Australia now is getting 10 new superchargers added to the 9 that gives them 20 plus. There's one in Bunbury, which is over on the Perth side.
Oh, another one over there?
Yeah.
Bunbury.
So well, you can't go from Adelaide to Perth without a couple of superchargers because that's about 3,000 miles. So they're going to have to put a couple across the Nullarbor Plain, mate.
But it's only like 9 or 10 kilometers, isn't that right?
It's a continent away.
It's quite a way away, mate. Let's do David Hines' letter, which is, here we go. I was really pleased to see that Tesla had a bunch of proposed superchargers peppered along the southeastern borders of Australia, mate. I'm from Adelaide, and that makes things a lot better. So here's my question. Since now I'm going to be really reliant on these superchargers, because I'm now going to take my Tesla, I'm going to drive it to Melbourne, and then I'm going to drive up to Sydney, and then I'm going to go to Brizzy. Mate, how reliable are these things? Do they break a lot? Can I really trust this supercharger network? And my summary was, I don't use the supercharger network a lot, but it is very robust here in the United States. The only time I've seen a broken supercharger is because it got vandalized.
But I would say as the system gets built, it's always good to have a backup plan, a destination charger, maybe location in the area. Never leave without your cable of charging loveliness and your kit that Robert eventually will show us all.
Oh, that's true. Yes, I do need to do that. Now it's no longer in my trunk. It's now my frunk.
Oh, it's in the frunk.
And I've got my 40-foot J1773 extension.
We'll get to it soon. Yeah. We'll get to it soon.
Yeah.
Tony Bailey has a question, which is actually best answered by Dave Mason. And he basically says this, when will electric cars and ICE cars basically be at parity? And in terms of, you know, loveliness, ease of use, likingness. And I say it's now, and here's the audio. Well, the best way to answer this letter is to talk to Dave Mason. Your dad does not have a Tesla.
Mm-mm.
Your dad went for a big long drive with you and your Tesla to Fresno and back, six hours.
Yeah, I had to pick up a package in Fresno, and they delivered it to the apartment and not down here. So at breakfast, my dad's like, hey, I'm not doing anything. If you want to drive up to Fresno, let's do it. So I'm like, okay, let's go. Let's just go. Because we're not paying in gas. So we'll just go.
It's free. It's good.
So we get in the car and full charge, get to Tejon, charge it up for like 10 minutes. We went to the bathroom. We got a couple Diet Cokes.
Of course you did.
A couple little peanuts.
Yes.
And then continued on the way. Was showing him the automatic steering with the cruise control. Got to Fresno, picked up the package, drove to the Fresno supercharger, had to charge that for like 45 minutes, got a little lunch, got back in the car, drove back down to Tejon, charged again for another 10 minutes, and then back into LA. And at the end, my dad was like, I just have to say that I'm completely sold on Tesla. This is the best car I've ever driven in on such a long drive. And the idea of the whole range anxiety, not even an issue anymore, because waiting at a supercharger, not even that bad. It was a nice day. We just sat in the car. We went and got a Diet Coke. We walked around, and he really enjoyed it. And he said it was probably the best, because he was a salesman for a long time, driving up and down California. Selling, and he said that was the best car road trip he's ever been in because of the Tesla. And he said if we had the Tesla a year ago,
yes,
and he was sold on it,
ladies and gentlemen,
he said he would have put his reservation in for the Model 3 a year ago after that trip.
Because we've been talking about this for a while. He's sort of been on the edge. I don't know. Right. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. And now he's done. He's done.
He's now. And then we went out to dinner when we got back, and he was like, "I just don't understand why anyone is driving gas cars anymore."
He's gone completely the other way.
He said it doesn't even make sense anymore. And he said, and we even talked about that when the Model 3 comes out. How fast do you think that turnover is going to be? And I think it's going to probably take a year or two because there's going to be a limited number of Model 3s, and those people are going to have to drive their friends around. And once their friends see that range isn't a problem and it's a beautiful car, then you start questioning like, well, wait a second. Why am I dealing with oil changes and smog checks and all these hoses and fluids and spark plugs and things that have to make a car run when you get such a nice ride in an electric car?
Yep. So to answer the listener's question, I think we're right there. I think we are right at the point where if the price of the Model 3 really is $35,000 for the base, it's still a bit more expensive than, say, a similarly configured ICE car. But as soon as that number becomes basically the same, then it's all over.
It's done.
Even I think people will pay extra for these cars because they're so nice. But at the time when the battery price comes down so much, and it probably will with the Gigafactory in the next year or so, that it's really pretty equivalent to the same configured ICE car. ICE cars are dead. You're going to see it happen so fast. Your dad is the reason, is the example. He's the guy. He's the bellwether. He's the canary in the haystack. Yeah. He's that guy.
And he said it too. He said that well, now that he thinks about it after the trip, the only problem he had was the range anxiety, right? That was the only thing gnawing at him. Now after the trip, he started to think, well, wait a second. If range anxiety is the only thing, he never even really considered all the other problems in an ICE car that could happen. And it's now not even a trade-off. Like all of those moving parts, something could go wrong. And there's less chance of something going wrong in an electric car. And the range anxiety was... He just sees it as not even equal anymore.
So the big question that's left for us is the Model S is such a beautiful ride. That's what gets you. The acceleration is great, but it's so smooth. It's so quiet. If the Model 3 has a similar kind of ride, and I don't see why it wouldn't. It's got to have the battery low down. Right. It's going to be quiet. It's going to have good acceleration, although not as fast as the S. Then I think you're right. People will be driving around their friends' 3s going, oh, yeah, where do I sign up for one of those puppies? We're done here.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave Mason, und Father.
Yeah, thank you.
He also asked this question. So we need to have charging everywhere. I don't like the way the cords looked. What about sort of non-corded charging everywhere? And my simple answer to this is there's going to be corded charging for a long time because uncorded charging is too slow for most people. What do you guys say?
I agree. Unless there's going to be the wattways. Highways where you just get on the highway and there's like a blue lane, and in that blue lane, electric vehicles will just charge as they motor down the highway.
Yeah.
So inductive charging is out there, but it's a bit slow. It's sort of for your garage.
And if you use a public charger, here, a little public service announcement. If you use a public charger, roll the cord back up as you leave. Don't let it lay on the ground.
Like, right.
Make it aesthetically pleasing. Be an example to the rest of the world that people who drive EV charged cars are going to take care of the infrastructure that's being built for them. Like if you go to Whole Foods and it's a free charger, wind the cord up before you leave. Don't leave it laying on the ground. Don't put the attacher on the ground. Like take care of it. This is your infrastructure. You need it. Be a good steward.
Since I don't go to gas stations anymore, Tom, I assume you do. Do you see people leaving the nozzle to the gas station, like just laying on the ground?
No. No. You never see that.
I've never seen that.
No.
Why would EV drivers do that? Because when one day they go to that location and they're actually running low and they actually do need to get 10 or 20 miles and it's busted because mm-hmm. somebody had to replace the cord, it's not been fixed yet,
yeah.
wouldn't they be bummed?
Yeah, but I see that all the time. Unwinded charger connector on the ground. It's not cool.
Matt Atkinson, who is a public health doc near Liverpool in the great that is Britain.
A scouser.
He's a scouser?
A scouser. A Liverpool Football Club fan is a scouser. I got called a scouser over the weekend. I was wearing my Liverpool jersey, and he's like, no scousers around here. And I was like, sorry, man.
That's funny. So he sends us a link to The Guardian that says, you know, flying cars are back. Uber's working on flying cars. Google is working on flying cars. There's this German company called Lilium, which has a EV flying car. It's an electric flying car, and it does this. 200 miles range, 186 miles an hour, due in when?
2020?
Really?
I'll take one.
Yeah, there's a couple of good videos out there. There's the flying amphibious car. It's not really a car. It looks more like a motorcycle with a net around it and a lot of fans. It's loud. And, you know, these are playthings, just like jet skis were when they first came out. Let's have fun with them. But seriously, this is not going to take me to work.
Tevin Grant has a YouTube channel called The Tesla Lawyer Show, I believe it's
not
called.
Not a podcast. We said it was a podcast. It's a YouTube channel.
He has a huge long email here, and he says the app and the media pick are stupid, but he liked Robert's napkin pick. Yeah, I did it again because there's more letters that say it's good.
Yeah.
Philip Ferens says, take a look at this video.
No.
It is Thailand's equivalent of the Falcon Heavy. And it is hysterical. It is a spinny wheel of death.
Yeah.
And it's basically, what do you call those things?
It's like a firework.
It's like a firework, but it's huge and it spins.
Uh-huh.
And it's a pretty funny video.
And they get, there's like four or five people get inside the stupid thing to light it on fire. And then it starts to smoke and you see them running away like who knows what could happen. It seems like it could easily have turned into one of those videos where like this has gone wrong.
And there's a guy standing alongside it just starting it to spin.
It's so cool. It's how like 17 people weren't killed from that thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ryan Elson says he likes the media and app pick of the week. In fact, he's got a media pick of himself, and it's How Beer Saved the World. It's a one-hour Discovery Channel documentary. And you know how beer saved the world, Tom?
No.
Because when you drank it, you didn't die from all the bugs that are in the water.
Ah,
so
that's
everybody in the Middle Ages was walking around drinking beer.
I did actually know that.
Adam G says, look, there's a lot here, but there's this idea of this block charge thing, and there's a TED talk about this as well. This is very confusing. It's about how you disremovate the banks and the...
Discombobulate. Are any of those words?
Just, you know, follow the links. Thank you, Adam. It's too hard to explain. Jim Kassmeyer has got some great infographics, which we're going to link you to. And podcast length by David
Sizlowski.
Sizlowski says, probably is a bit too long, but I got a long commute, so I don't mind.
It's long. We're sorry.
And I want to shorten it down because I find by 2 hours I'm going to die.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you said you didn't want it to be longer than a half an hour. And then
every 2 weeks.
Everybody said, we want to do it more. We want more. We want more.
Franco Capizzo, mate, we've talked to him many times, says, here we go. So someone has paid an extra $8,000 for an S or an X full self-driving capability. This is what we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You've dropped that cash. You didn't get it. You're going to be a little ticked off. And I think we covered that fairly well. I think right now, if you're about to buy a Model 3 and you want full autonomy.
Or you're about to lease a Model 3.
Or you're about to lease a Model 3. If it's an option for later, don't buy it now. Let's see how long this takes because it may not be for more than 2 years.
Yeah,
maybe many years before the feds or the states let you use this thing. So if you want to save some bucks, don't turn it on for now. Save the cash.
I guess as the only driver here who has functioning autopilot.
Thank you. Is this...
I'm not saying this to belittle you. I'm the one who popped all this extra money to try and bring this information to Tesla Nation.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool. It really does decrease my stress when I use it in the right situations, when I'm not driving into the sun in the early morning, when I'm in a highway that's rather congested, when I'm not in the super fast lane, number one lane, and there's all of these close walls next to me. If I put it in a two or a three lane, if I'm using it during traffic times, it helps a lot. I had to go downtown with my wife to, I can't remember what we did. I think maybe it was Disney Hall. Anyway, the traffic sucks at like 6 o'clock at night. But I got on the freeway and you know what I said to myself? Oh, this is going to be fun.
Self.
I got to say, in the X where the autonomous driving works quite well, traffic is not a problem now. I just go tick, tick, and it just crawls along with the traffic at 20 miles an hour.
Right. So you're a fan of original autopilot.
I'm a big fan of original autopilot.
That's good to know, because there's a lot of CPO. There's a ton of CPO cars now with original autopilot.
For that very specific thing that Robert's talking about, for very specific circumstances, it works really well. So in LA, very specific circumstances, we have horrible traffic that goes at 20 miles an hour, stop and go. It really takes the stress out of that.
And as you go through these CPO cars, there's still a lot of cars available without any autopilot.
Right.
And they're, you know, 40,000-50,000 is the cheapest. They're still holding value. But the original autopilot are starting to creep up the list, and there's more and more of them. They're still expensive, but they're out there. Free supercharging CPO cars are available. They're starting to go away as well. So,
and the development of autopilot is moving at software company speed. So I do agree. Every month, something new is going to come out. And by the time you go to the design studio in June to make your configuration, I'm really looking forward to what we'll be talking about on Talking Tesla as far as new developments. And hopefully you'll have had your brain transplant by then, Mel.
Nathan Dwyer and Pat from Oregon say the show length is okay. Joel Sepp says, hey, lads. Remember Joel Sepp, Talking Tesla, Black Caucus, original founder. He sent us a video about the flow, the Australian
red flow
batteries.
Yeah, as soon as we put this story, literally as soon as we stopped last week's show talking about the flow battery, they stopped making them, at least temporarily, because they were having some issues with them.
Well, they have to retool. They're having supply chain problems. There were impurities in their electrolyte solution. And basically, I think there was like a total of 20 RedFlow batteries. Now, I don't know how many they've actually installed, but they had 20 batteries that for one reason or another needed either service or replacing. And for them, it questioned, or at least put into question, their economic viability. There's not a lot of profit margin in these things. And so I expect they're going to still come back, although they said in this article, the creation of a battery system is incredibly expensive. There's a lot of risk. And there's even a couple of battery companies, I forgot the one started with an A, that Bill Gates invested in, went belly up despite having like $200 million in development money.
This is sad news for that company. Hopefully they can retool and get it together, but it's making Elon look smarter because there are all these technologies out there, and he basically sat down with the guys and the girls and the engineers and said, of all the stuff that I think is going to be good in the next 5 to 10 years, it's lithium-ion technology, and that's where they put the Gigafactory in. That looks like right now, that's the most viable thing. Hey, Elon, you're pretty smart. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're going to do it. We're going to finish it in an hour and 30 minutes.
Nice.
Which seems to be a nice sort of in between.
I feel good about it.
30 minutes every 2 weeks.
I'm sad.
2.5 hours.
Because there were some other stories that I really wanted to talk about.
But we got to the good stuff. We got to the meat of the matter. We talked about the Model 3. Is mine ready? Is it ready now? Because the show's been an hour and a half. It's been another hour and a half.
Is this thing on?
People are going to hate the end of the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, here's Tom, Robert, Mel, Talking Tesla. Talk to you soon. Patreon people, thank you. I'm going to give you something super special for this week.
Review and rate us on iTunes, please. Only if it's a good review.
And use our referral code numbers. They're all on the website now.
Are they?
I don't know.
I sure hope so. I sent mine in.
We'll make sure that they're up there. And please go watch that TED Talk if you need to be inspired. Gather the children and everybody come around, hold hands, watch that TED Talk and go, like Chris Ennison, I can't believe this guy's thinking of this stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
It's G-rated.
Very cool.
See ya.
Did we do this without cursing? I think we got two.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Talking Tesla is a production of Hulu Incorporated. Produced by Mel Herbert and CC Herbert. Hosted by Mel Herbert, Tom Wolfson, and Robert Rosenblum. To support Talking Tesla, go to patreon.com/Talking Tesla. And finally, if you love the show, write us a review on iTunes.